The man in the photograph holds a violin, deep chestnut, almost red. He laughs, luminous, looks right at the camera, violin in one hand and bow in the other, a blue and gray plaid shirt, a gold wedding ring lit up by the flash, his hair, what's left of it, white. It was Howard Scott's 87th birthday, the newspaper story said. His family threw a party at the assisted care facility where he lived in Lacey, Washington. His children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren came to celebrate. They sang. He blew out candles. Everyone ate cake. "We have a surprise for you," his grandson said, and handed him an instrument case. Inside was the violin. "Not just any violin, mind you," I read in the paper, "but a violin 60 years in the making." To make a violin, you need horses. You need elephants, cattle, tortoises, snakes, abalone, whales. You need lambs fed on dry mountainous pasture. You need mastodons dug from Arctic ice. You need trees felled in winter when their trunks are free of sap, trees grown on a forest's south side in stony soil with little water so they mature slowly, their trunks strong and branchless. To make a violin, you need war. It is said Antonio Stradivari's most beautiful instruments were built of maple sent from Turkey to Italy, intended for oars that would row Italian warships. Because they were often at war with the Italians, the Turks sent wood with uneven grain, wood they knew would crack and split under the weight of water. But when Stradivari saw the curved wood, he knew he could make it sing. People used to believe photographs captured something material from the person standing in front of the camera. They thought it worked like this. Sunlight bounced off the body and onto the photographic plate, and when that light traveled from body to plate, it carried a physical element with it, a trace, however small. Photographs were like icons, they thought, like the story about the woman so moved by the sight of Jesus falling under the weight of the cross he was carrying to Golgotha, that she pushed through the crowd, past Roman soldiers, to reach him. With her veil, she wiped Jesus's face. Some call her Veronica, a name that comes from the Latin words vera, true, and icon, image, because in return for her tenderness, Jesus granted her a portrait. On that cloth, in blood and sweat, she found an imprint of his face. I called information and asked for the telephone number of a man named Howard Scott in Lacey, Washington. "Hold, please," the operator said, and then a recorded voice told me his number. I dialed, the phone rang, a man answered. "I read about you in the paper," I said. "Don't believe everything you read about me," he said. I told him my name, explained why I was calling, asked if it might be okay for me to write about him. "Yes," he said. "Are you one of my students?" "No," I said. "I was also in Vietnam," he said. Something wasn't quite right, but I couldn't put my finger on it. "I'll send you a letter," I said. "I'll give you time to think about it." I hung up the phone and wrote him a letter. I put it in the mail. I waited for weeks, months. No response. I worried Howard had died. I called the number again. The phone rang and rang. The artist, Anne Hamilton, held a canister containing a strip of film inside her mouth and used her lips as an aperture to create each exposure, a mouth-held pinhole camera. To take a photograph of another person, she stood facing her subject, less than a foot away, her mouth open, both people looking at each other, nothing between them, just Hamilton's open mouth. She said she wanted the part of her body where all song exists to also become her eye. I had nearly forgotten about the picture of Howard and the violin, about the letter I sent, about wanting to write about him, but then I heard a message on my phone from Kayleen Pritchard, Howard's daughter. Kayleen told me she'd just found my letter on her father's desk, buried in a stack of papers. She called right away. Months ago, she'd been going through boxes of her parents' files and letters. They'd saved everything. Ration stamps, brochures, newspaper articles, letters to the editor. Her mother, Ruane, had died a few years back, and Kayleen wanted to put her parents' things in order, tell their story before it was too late. But she felt overwhelmed. I said to the universe, "I need someone to help me," she told me. "I need someone to write a book about this." That was on May 25th. Kayleen said on the phone, "The same day you wrote your letter. Come see us."